Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
A picture from Spain caught our eye. It was a group of older Muslim women in head coverings, publicly mourning those killed in the Barcelona attack. And reportedly, some of the terrorists behind that attack were their children. How does that happen? Well, we point you to a new book and to Sophocles' Antigone. Antigone and her sister Ismene can't save their two brothers. Both are killed in war. One, the soldier, is buried with honors. It's decreed that the other, the rebel, the embarrassment, must be left on the battlefield to rot. But Antigone defies that decree and buries him. Kamala Shamsi's devastating retelling of Antigone is titled Home Fire. At the center, two British-Pakistani sisters, Isma and Anika. Isma raised Anika and her twin brother Parvez in London after their parents, including a father they hardly knew, die. Isma goes off to study in the U.S. Anika studies law in London. Parvez becomes fodder for ISIS recruiters. Homefire has been longlisted for Britain's Man Booker Prize. Dwight Garner of the New York Times says it builds to one of the most memorable final scenes I've read in a novel this century. We agree, and we will not give that away. Author Kamala Shamsi was born in Pakistan, became a British citizen, and like her character, studied in the U.S. She joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
What were you trying to say about this nexus, Pakistan, London, a U.S. university?
It's not so much I'm trying to say as I'm trying to explore and understand. Mm. You know, and these are places which have interrelated histories within my life very personally. But also in the last few years, I suppose, within sort of a post 9/11 world, there have just been different ways in which all three countries have been caught up with the war on terror and have different ideas about it. And if you're someone who moves between the three, you get very struck by the way people see the world differently and experience being in the world differently. And I was also interested in what it is to be a Muslim in Britain, which is my new country. I mean, I became a citizen there 4 years ago. I've been living there 10 years. So in a way, I think this was me exploring this new nation that I'm now a part of.
Yeah. And I'm looking at you. You're wearing a beautiful dress. Your arms exposed. You're not wearing a head covering. Mm-hmm. Isma, your character, this older, sober sister who's raised her siblings, she does wear a head covering. And the book starts, and it's half comic. It is actually the comic, tragic, you know, masks, because the interrogation that she goes through, leaving Britain and then coming to the U.S., it lasts nearly 2 hours. Officials want to know her thoughts on Shias, homosexuals, the Queen, democracy, the Great British Bake Off, the invasion of Iraq, Israel, suicide bombers, and dating websites. And she had prepared for this. Is this something you're familiar with? Muslims traveling in the world, training with friends for what they might be asked?
I've never had anything as grueling as Isma's had. But when I go through security, and now I've got a British passport, it's less. But when I had a Pakistani passport, there was always this sort of way in which I was preparing myself. And I did. I mean, I never prepared for questions on the Great British Bake Off, though I know people do get asked things that ridiculous.
They want to detect if you really are a British citizen or if you've somehow faked your papers.
Yeah. It's sort of unclear what it is, because people do. I mean, you know, there are British Muslims who quite clearly have the passport, and it's almost as if they're trying to trip you up somehow, get you agitated. It's completely unclear to me what the questioning is about.
Well, listen, if somebody asked me about the Great British Bake Off. I don't think I've only watched it once or twice.
So well, I mean, the last time I came, I thought, what if someone pulls me aside in the American interrogation room and say, so what do you think of our president? You know, you do have these questions. You think, what will I say then?
Well, and like, as you write, Muslims prepare. They did try to come up with the right answer. Mm-hmm. And when Isma finally gets to school, we meet another character, Eamon, who is the son of a British official. Tell us more about him and what he means in the story.
He's British like her. His father is from a Pakistani background like her, but they couldn't be more different. His father is a very powerful politician. He's the Home Secretary, which would put him as one of the senior most figures in government. And his father's from a Muslim background, but has really in some ways made a political choice to disown the Muslim side of him in order to progress politically. And so Eamon, the son, whose mother is Irish-American, he sort of grows up without any sense of himself as being of a Pakistani or Muslim background. He's just a very privileged British boy who's used to every kind of privilege and doesn't think about this aspect of his own heritage. And then he runs into Isma.
Well, Isma and her siblings do have to think about it, because another part of the backstory is that the father that they hardly knew was a fighter for Muslim causes from Bosnia to Chechnya to perhaps Guantanamo. I mean, there's a backstory that they don't know that much about. And that brings us to Parvez, the brother who, when the sisters fly off, he is preyed upon by ISIS. He's recruited. And part of it is he desperately wants to know who this father was. I mean, there are so many threads here. Do you know these people? Were you imagining these people? What would it be like if your father was at Guantanamo? Where did it all come from?
It was a fair amount of imagining and some sort of extrapolating from situations that might be more familiar. But I suppose I've spent a number of years thinking about young British Muslims and what it is for someone a generation younger than me who's really grown up Muslim in the post 9/11 world and who feel themselves within a country always being an object of suspicion. You know, and that's true of those whose fathers didn't have this life. But in this case, I overlaid on it the fact that this particular family, there's an extra level that's internalized because they know that their father really was this terrorist to some, a freedom fighter to another.
And you seem to put those fears in the mouths of a cousin. We've said Parvez does get recruited by ISIS, the brother. And at one point, Anika, his twin, is desperate, just like Antigone, to help her brother. And she appeals to this cousin in Pakistan, and he says, "Crazy girl, I don't want to know anything. Did you stop to think about those of us with passports that look like toilet paper to the rest of the world who spend our whole lives being so careful we don't give anyone a reason to reject our visa applications? Don't stand next to this guy. Don't follow that guy on Twitter. Don't download that Noam Chomsky book." And then he goes on to say, here's what your brother did. By joining ISIS, he jeopardized everyone that ever knew him.
Yeah, it's the whole guilt by association thing, right? I mean, if you're a Muslim and some cousin or relative of yours or someone with the same last name has done something, you have to live with that. You know, if you're a Muslim committing a crime in the world, you're never the lone wolf. Everyone in any kind of contact with you is viewed with suspicion. And the cousin that is talking at this point isn't just Muslim, but he's Pakistani. He's got a Pakistani passport. He has to go through incredibly rigorous visa checks to come to America where his sister lives. And he's saying, you know, this distant cousin who I never knew has gone and done something, and now that jeopardized my ability and my parents' ability to go to the country where my sister, their daughter, lives.
So many characters, so many story threads that all come, you know, knit together. But we want to mention, you know, this is modern day. In Sophocles' time, in Greek mythology, there was the Greek chorus. You know, the people watching on the sidelines, maybe giving some insight, describing events or narrating or talking to the characters. You have media and social media.
Yeah, I had some fun with that. because when I was reading the play, of course, the Greek chorus plays a huge part. And one of the things you notice is they're quite fickle. And one moment they're siding with the king and the other moment they're saying, oh, but Antigone is looking so sad and, you know, I'm sort of feeling for her right now. And as I was reading it, I thought, oh, this could be Twitter, you know. And I wanted to work in that sense of the wider world. So although it is about two families, it's also about the country they're in and the mood of the country. And I wanted to get that through via the tabloid press, via Twitter, via news reports and all kinds of things. And you know, because that is the chorus. Yeah. With which we're living in.
Antigone does not end well for Antigone.
No. That's the nature of Greek tragedy.
And yeah, I was glad that I didn't go remind myself that. And I would say to listeners, read your book first and then go back to Antigone. But your ending is just stunning. We don't want to give it away, but it is breathtaking, breathtakingly sad. Why end it on that note? Because you could have just jiggered it a little. I mean, it's Antigone, so you kind of, but you could have just jiggered it a little bit.
So here's the thing. When you write a novel, you come to get very deeply invested in the lives of your characters.
Same when you read it. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's more if you're living with them for months and months. And so as I'm approaching the ending, I lie to myself about what that ending is because I can't bear what the ending actually is. So I tell myself that that I am going to actually fudge it in a little way or make something else happen. But there's a sort of inexorable logic to the novel you're writing. It's moving in a certain direction, and at a certain point, there is only one endpoint that makes sense. I like to believe that even within the ending there is something that is human in a way that is optimistic. But to give but really it's going to be all right, folks, ending is just false, you know. And there are too many moments where that we're living in and around us where we know that it's a lie to say that. And what we have to say is, look, this is the direction in which we're heading. Look at it. Just look at it. And then go away and think about that and see what you want to do about it.
Kamala Shamsi, the novel is Home Fire, a novel. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.